Welcome to our inaugural episode of Healthy Minds. We are really excited to be here today with you. My name is Julie, and I have two guests here with me. Can you introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Anita, and I'm a Healthy Transitions Facilitator.
Hi, my name is Drew, and I am the manager of Humanum's Healthy Transitions Program.
Great. So, Anita, can you tell me a little bit about what you do, and also if you could move anywhere in the world, where would you go and why?
So, I work with 16 to 25-year-olds. I do case management with them on a one-to-one basis. My biggest concern is making sure that their mental health is stable. So making sure they have a therapist, a psychiatrist. If not, I'm finding one for them. I'm going as far as taking them to and from appointments, helping them schedule appointments. I also focus on employment and education. So in regards to employment, I'm helping them fill out applications, doing resumes, helping them do mock interviews. In regards to education, I'm, you know, helping them maintain staying in school. So whether that be attending an IEP for someone in high school, if they're ready to go to college, I'm helping them apply for college, helping them find scholarships, loans, grants. I'm also helping them maybe even apply for FAFSA. I also assist with independent living skills and teaching those. So I go as far as taking them to the grocery store, helping them make a shopping list, helping them budget their money for when they go to the grocery store. Sometimes I even help them clean their room when their mom or dad gets a little upset with them. So that's basically what I do in a nutshell. And if I could move anywhere, it's kind of basic, but I would go to Florida. That way I could be near the beach and Disney World at all times.
That sounds great. Drew, can you tell me what you do and also what's your favorite movie and why?
So it would probably be a lot easier just to tell you what I don't do on a daily basis because I'm so busy every day that I think I do a little bit of everything. And as Anita was discussing, a lot of what she's doing on a broader sense, I'm trying to kind of coordinate several staff to reach out and work with young adults. We have a team of six and they're fantastic people. Each transition facilitator works with a caseload of about 15 or 16 individuals, young adults, and they do what Anita was referring to, some of the specific goals and ideas that they're trying to accomplish. But in a much broader sense, what I do is I try to coordinate with different networks in the Howard County community so that they're aware of what our organization does, what our program does. We're trying to make people aware that individuals, they call them transition age youth, so 16 to 25-year-olds require a lot of assistance. They're going through a lot of things that are unique to them, and so we don't want them to get lost in the shuffle, so to speak. So I reach out to other community providers. I also coordinate and meet with the young adults themselves that enroll into our program, and I connect them with the transition facilitator that I think meets their needs best. The way I look at it is not every individual is the same, and they all come with different challenges, so to speak, and they're not always comfortable with the same personality, and so it's important to match the right personality with the right individual so that they can achieve those goals. If those connections aren't made, then a lot of times the success doesn't come. Also, on a more specific role, if you wanted to say, what do I do on a daily basis, then usually I'm involved with a lot of meetings with parents. We have a lot of concerned is probably the right word. Parents that come to us asking us, what can we do for our young adults and how best can we help the services? So we try to collaborate with them to make them feel part of the services. I'm also involved with meetings with the young adults themselves. I meet with the transition facilitators to discuss the progress that they're making. Also, there's frequently a lot of fires that I seem to be putting out because there's a lot of bureaucratic meetings as well. But there are those wonderful opportunities where I get to sit down and engage the young adults and they tell us, hey, I'm really thinking this program is all right. I was hesitant to come in. I didn't think it was going to work. I was kind of nervous, but we're really excited to be here. I feel like I'm getting more confident. I feel like I'm achieving things. And honestly, that's my takeaway. That's what I think of when I come to my job, and that's what I'm trying to get out of it. So that's usually what my day is. A lot.
What's your favorite movie?
Ah, thanks. My favorite movie is The Breakfast Club. I love that movie because truthfully, I guess it kind of fits in with our population. You take five unique different individuals in high school. They all get thrown into a room together. They don't think they like each other. They don't trust each other. And by the end of the movie, they've learned to like each other, trust each other. And there's a really cool song that is attached to it too. So that's what I like to think of the Healthy Transitions program.
So Julie, Drew and I did a lot of talking. I think you should tell everyone what you do.
Okay. Thanks, Anita. So I'm the outreach and education specialist for the Healthy Transitions program. And so to put it simply, I find these young adults that need help. I meet with them. Maybe they need a therapist before they can even get into the program. Maybe their families are driving them up a wall. So we kind of go in and put out a little bit of fires. Like Drew just said, we put out some fires to help them just even get in the door, so to speak. I also do a lot of community education. So actually next week we have a ton of stuff coming up. May 6th through 12th is Children's Mental Health Awareness Week. So we have events almost every day. If you'd like to find out more, you can go on our website, which is Humanim, H-U-M-A-N-I-M. So humanim.org, and it's up on our blog. You can find us on our social media too, Maryland Healthy Transitions, and there's some more information there. And we'll talk more about what specifically is available next week later in the podcast. But I got ahead of myself a little bit. So I manage the Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. I am quite the social media guru now, right? I also now manage this podcast that we're starting here today. So it's getting lit, y'all. I also lead the educational workshops that we do. We offer them a couple of times a year. There's like 17 right now. I'm not going to list them all, but I'm going to give you a snippet. So we do stuff the school doesn't teach you. Financial literacy, conflict resolution, healthy relationships, nutrition, hygiene. And you know, some of that is at the school and some of y'all were sleeping or cutting class or something. So we're just doing a refresher and making sure that you're ready for the knowledge and you're ready for adult life. I'm not going to keep going. You're welcome. I also do a lot of the fun stuff. So I'm a little sorry for Anita and Drew here because they don't get to do all the fun stuff that I do. However, they do join me on our group outings like Hershey Park, Bright Fest. Outdoor movie night is my personal favorite. We build a screen. We do a lot of movies. We try to stick with the classics. So we watched Jaws last year. That was pretty fun. Ghostbusters. We're talking about Honey, I Shrunk the Kids this year. So among others, we're doing like 5 or 6 this year. And so now that you know, like each one of us here, we're going to hop into why we're actually here talking your ear off. So the podcast itself, you might be able to tell, we're very passionate about mental health or behavioral health and also emerging adults. You guys are so very special. And we're going to tell you all about why you're so very special today. And so this podcast is a behavioral health podcast specifically for 16 to 25 year olds. We are going to be monthly, and we're going to follow kind of a similar format for each one. So you'll have your lovely host, and you'll have a guest or two, as well as somebody with lived experience. And we think that's very important to hear from somebody just like you experiencing the same things. So today, unfortunately, you're stuck with all of us as the lived experience of going through being an emerging adult. And so, you know, forgive us if we maybe make some missteps about what you guys are going through, but we... everything we're going to do is brought to you by science, by research, by evidence-based practices. And so if you ever have a question about something we're doing, please reach out. We're happy to clarify where our sources come from on all of the topics we're talking about. Okay, that was a lot of introduction, but we thought it was important for our inaugural episode. So to really start this podcast off, we need to get into what actually mental health is and then like what a behavioral health diagnosis is. So, Anita?
So mental health is a person's emotional, psychological, and social well-being overall. Everybody has mental health. If you have a brain, you have mental health. So when a lot of people hear mental health, they think of an illness, they think of a disorder, and that's not the case at all. Just like you have physical health, you also have mental health. So you can have good days and bad days, and it's important to realize that your brain is a vital organ, just like your heart, your lungs, your muscles. You got to exercise all of them. So you really have to exercise your brain too. And a way we like to encourage that is through self-care practice. So whether you do some meditation, some yoga, listen to a podcast, all that is included in self-care.
So can you elaborate a little bit more about mental health and how to take care of it?
So just like you go to the doctors every year and you go to the dentist every 6 months. So if you're not doing that, now you know how often you should be going. We really have to make sure that we're checking in with ourselves and our friends and families to make sure that our mental health is good. So that could be going to a therapist or psychiatrist. But if you're not comfortable with that, a great resource to start is your primary care physician. They can help give you insight and direct you if maybe you're not feeling, you know, not so normal. So it's really important to make sure we do wellness visits for our brain as well.
Okay. So where is that line between having a bad day and maybe meeting diagnostic criteria for a behavioral health diagnosis?
Well, it's normally over a period of time. It depends on the diagnosis. But we don't want people to think that just because you had a bad day or you couldn't get out of bed today, that it's the beginning of mental health. The idea is that it usually takes several months, maybe 6 months or so, before a diagnosis, a clinical diagnosis, can actually be made. So getting back to your day where I couldn't get out of bed, I was really anxious because I had a big paper or a big essay, there's no reason to get super worried at that moment. However, if it's happening more often than not and it's interfering with your daily living experiences, then it might be something you want to go and speak to your doctor about. It's important to say that if you're concerned about yourself or anyone else for that matter, that don't wait. Don't wait just because you heard me say it takes 6 months. What you want to do is you want to reach out as soon as you possibly can. You want to talk to your primary care doctor. They're a good resource. If you can find a therapist, please contact them. And if it's a crisis and you feel like 911 is your best need, then reach out to them. Basically, you just want to be cognizant of how you're feeling. And as I was saying earlier, this is not just you. You also want to reach out if you're concerned about others, people that you know, your friends, your loved ones, things of that nature. Okay.
So we talked a lot about time. Are there other qualifications?
There are definitely other qualifications. Their symptoms have to be bothering you for a really long time, as Drew said. So, and also, as he said, the symptoms have to be bothering you and disrupting your daily living activities. So this might mean poor hygiene. You don't feel like getting in the bath anymore, taking a shower or brushing your teeth, or you're not up to what you used to do when you really enjoyed going out and playing baseball. You just don't want to do it anymore. So these are some signs that maybe it's time for you to call for some help. There are really specific criteria that each diagnosis has to be met in order to actually have that diagnosis. And we're not really going to go into much detail about that right now because each diagnosis really deserves its own episode because there's a lot to know about each one.
Okay. Can you give me a little bit of background about who we're serving? I know we've kind of talked about it, but let's get specific.
So as I said, we do work with 16 to 25 year olds, and they do all have a mental health diagnosis. They have a referral that comes in from a psychiatrist or a therapist that their diagnosis is present. So our individuals, our clientele, need a little extra help during this time to navigate through this new transition period that they're coming across.
But why do they need that special service for this age group? Can't they stick with therapy, psychiatry?
So I'm glad you asked this question. There are two key things that I want to get across based on what you said. Number one is often they are already receiving these services, and yet they're still struggling. They may be in and out of the hospital, or perhaps they've dropped out of school, or they might be using substances to alleviate some of their symptoms, and unbeknownst to them, they're exacerbating their underlying behavioral health challenge. But the second thing that I really want to highlight is you asked, why do they need special services for this age group? And that's because the simple answer is that they're unique. 16 to 25 year old is a very different and challenging period of time. There's also two different systems that are set up to help individuals who have behavioral health challenges. One is the child and adolescent community-based behavioral health systems. And then there's the adult community-based behavioral health system. Children and adolescent works with individuals who are basically 3, 4, 5, 6, all the way until they reach age of 18. They do a fantastic job working with these children. They have a scholastic approach, a way it's clinically designed to best practices to help them. And the adult system helps individuals who are 18 all the way to 70s, 80s. And they have a great way to interact with them. The problem is when an adolescent ages out of 17 and they turn 18, in these systems, they get transferred to the adult psychiatric system. They do not, however, magically become adults. And so that is where the gap in services is. They, by age, by demographics, they fit the adult population. But as far as their brain still developing, as far as they're still making childlike choices, as far as they are thinking about their future, as far as they're trying to explore options, learn about things, they're not necessarily adult individuals. So this program, the 16 to 25-year-old population that Anita was referring to, is unique. And what we do, the Healthy Transitions Program, and programs that are like us, that are designed to specifically work with this population, we look at it more as an ongoing developmental stage. So we're more geared to help people navigate these conflicting emotions, navigate trying to create foundational bases for them to achieve their goals. And so it helps these young adults achieve things that they didn't think were possible. If we weren't there, or if people designed specifically to help this population weren't there, then I'm afraid to say a lot of these young adults will get lost in the shuffle.
I also think it's important just to mention that we're that one person that they can depend on. And it's not something that happens overnight. You know, we meet this person for the first time. We have all this paperwork and all ask all these questions. And it takes time for us to for them to trust us and for us to build a rapport with them. But in comparison to traditional behavioral health, they have more access to us outside of their therapist and their psychiatrist. They have a direct line to us. They can text us, call us, send an email. You know, they can get to us most hours out of the day. And we're out in the community with them, helping them to access those resources, which is different from traditional behavioral health. And Mental Health First Aid actually has said that individuals who have one trusted adult will actually have better outcomes and more positive outcomes compared to someone who doesn't have that one person.
Wow. So we're looking at the gaps between child and adult services, and I guess we've recognized that there needs to be special services. So does the system always catch these young adults, though? Like, if we're seeing them in school struggling, shouldn't the school be reaching out, or maybe the police? Someone's finding them, right?
So unfortunately, the answer is no. That is the reason why I'm glad that we're getting a chance to talk today. That's the reason why I'm glad that we have someone like Julie, who's our outreach and education specialist. The short answer is that no, these individuals frequently are falling through the cracks for reasons that maybe the school counselors, the school teachers don't necessarily know how to address some of their issues. Some of the parents don't exactly understand the challenges that their youth are experiencing. So what we're happy to do, what we're thrilled to be able to do, is have Julie go out there and explain what our program is. What we do is we go throughout Howard County and we try to partner with the school system. We try to partner with the police. We try to partner with Hope Works, the Domestic Violence Center. We've partnered with Grassroots, the Crisis Intervention Center. The whole idea is that there has to be education, not just for the youth, but education for the county, so that people are aware that a program like this exists. Oh, this individual is having challenges. Thank goodness we found out that there's a program that helps young adults with behavioral health challenges. So it's growing and it's taking time, but we're happy to say that maybe the next time we do a podcast, the answer will be different. And we can say, yes, these individuals are not falling through the cracks and people are finding them. One thing I wanted to highlight is that we also work with the detention center. This is going to come as a shocking number to you, but 70% of the youth that are in the Department of Justice system meet the criteria of having a behavioral health challenge. That doesn't mean that their needs are being addressed. That doesn't mean that the system, Department of Justice of Systems, is designed to help take care of these individuals. But with the outreach that we're doing, with the knowledge that we're trying to share, with the awareness that we're trying to create, there is more organizations who are aware of what we're doing and are more willing to reach out to us so that we can help them get the support they need.
I think it's also important to note that there's a big misconception with people in mental health in general. They are far more likely to be the victim of a crime, and they are far more likely to be the victim of violence. It is very low numbers. It's just unfortunately the way our media is set up. They like to sensationalize the news, and so I encourage you guys to turn off the TV if you see some things that don't sit right with you and to stop following websites that don't sit right with you. So we're going to switch gears. Anita, can you talk to me a little bit about the statistics of mental health? How prevalent is this? Like, we're talking about it a lot. We're mentioning a lot of numbers and statistics. So we're going to keep going with the numbers.
So, Julie, it's very prevalent. About one in every four people actually meet criteria for a behavioral health diagnosis. So just so you all understand, let's say today or tomorrow we go anywhere in America, get four random people. One of those people will meet criteria. Now, the numbers can change because different locations, circumstances, situations, you know, it's not set in stone, but definitely one of our people meet criteria. Also, 20% of the general population actually has anxiety. Now, from my experience, I think that number is very low and should be a lot higher because everyone experiences anxiety in different ways and forms. It doesn't look the same on to any two people. Also, something interesting is that from the time a person actually starts experiencing symptoms to the time they actually seek treatment, we actually see an 8 to 10 year span. That time span is very alarming to me because let's say someone with diabetes started getting the symptoms of increased thirst, increased urination, and they waited 8 to 10 years in order to get help from a doctor. That's life-threatening. Things can happen to their body. Organs can start shutting down. So your mental health is important. You have to get help if you start feeling these symptoms or starting to feel things aren't going the same as they used to be.
I'm really glad that you brought that up because one of the things that I feel is very important is that we're addressing these underlying issues a lot more immediately than we have in the past. This program is designed to, as I said, work with 16 to 25-year-olds. You can think of it as an early intervention program where there's things that are designed to help individuals who are experiencing first episode psychosis. And we'll talk about that obviously later, perhaps in other podcasts. But what I wanted to get across was that 50% of these young adults will develop a behavioral health condition by the age of 14. 75% experience behavioral health onset by the age of 24. As Anita said, if it takes 8 to 10 years for them to seek services or for services to reach out and actually help them and identify them as people that need supports, then now we're talking about individuals who are in their 30s who have been dealing with mental health challenges for a very long time. What sets us apart, what is unique about what we're trying to do, is that we can alleviate the hardships that a lot of these individuals face by helping them early on. That's part of the reason why it's kind of a community effort. We have to make other people and other agencies and organizations aware of what we're doing. And we have to make other people aware of what the warning signs are for when young adults look and act like they're experiencing challenges that are greater than just everyday living challenges for young adults. Mental health cannot, I shouldn't say cannot, but it needs to not go unidentified. It needs to come to the vision of people who are out there designed to help them. And so that is the reason why we're excited about our program, but it's also the reason why we're excited about this age group in and of itself. This age group needs more help so that they can succeed without experiencing challenges that don't have to be put there for periods of non-diagnosis.
And you know that social media is really starting to kind of change the way we're looking at mental health. Before, we've had a really unfortunate psychiatric history. If you guys ever go look back in your history books, it is just absolutely heartbreaking to see what was done even just 50 years ago. And so it is very heartening to see social media people, a lot of celebrities have been posting about their own challenges. There's so many, I can't even think of any right now, but there's a ton of them. And if you go look, there's so many good resources out there to take advantage of. You know, we've had a couple of well-known people recently die by suicide as well. And so we want to just take a second and recognize just a few and talk a little bit about that. So Avicii, Chester Bennington, Robin Williams, Chris Cornell, just to name just a few, just off the top of our heads here. And, you know, it's such a shame. And again, we want to encourage media people to practice safe reporting practices. It is actually a requirement by federal law, but it doesn't necessarily always happen that way. And, you know, it's such a hard subject to talk about, but it's very important to do so. We're also seeing a lot of dank memes out there lately, which are really covering anxiety, depression, which is so great. We're so excited people are talking about it. We love to see people talk and joke about mental health, obviously in a positive way. And the majority of these crack us up. We share them amongst the staff. We laugh about them later. And sometimes we can even relate because everybody experiences anxiety, depression, all sorts of things at all times. It's just, again, we're talking about the diagnostic criteria versus having a bad day. And so sometimes, though, we worry about some of these memes and we worry about the people posting them. And so, you know, just be kind, be gentle, make sure that you're not spreading stigma. Make sure that you're not maybe hurting somebody in the process if you're sharing these memes. And, you know, if somebody suddenly starts to joke a lot about it or is suddenly tagging you in a lot of memes, that can be a warning sign. So find a way to reach out. And we know that that's so very hard and it can be hard to check in. But, you can check out the website, seizetheawkward.org, for more tips on how to have that conversation.
So, you know, unfortunately, suicide is the third leading cause of death for 10 to 24-year-olds. And overall, in the U.S. for all ages, it's actually the 10th cause of death. And that's scary. That's alarming. But there's so many things that you can talk about when it comes to suicide. And it's a tough subject. It's hard to ask a family or friend those questions, just to check in on them. And we're going to dedicate a whole episode, maybe even two episodes, to that. But I do just want to leave with this one statistic, that for every completed suicide, we think but aren't sure that there's probably about 25 attempts. And there's no way to be sure of that number, only because some people don't ever even tell someone that they attempted it.
That's very sobering. And it's kind of hard to switch gears after such an important topic, and one that really is just not talked about enough in a positive way. We are going to tell you about a couple of resources that everybody should have. So please pull out your phones right now. Yes, talking to you there, ignoring me. Please pull out your phone. Okay. I want you to put these two numbers in there because it is so vitally important for every human being everywhere. We talked about 1 in 4. You are going to run across people experiencing mental health issues, crises. Maybe it's yourself, maybe it's your friend. And like we talked about, it's hard, but you want to be prepared so it's not as hard. So please put in the number 1-800-273-TALK. That is our national suicide prevention hotline, 1-800-273-TALK. If you're like me and you don't love talking on the phone, there's a text hotline, 741-741, okay? 741-741. You don't have to say anything in particular for the text. You can say, hi, what's up? Yo, I need help. I don't know what to do. Whatever's going to start that conversation in an easy way. It does take a little bit because it's just not as immediate as a phone call. So if you are at a breaking point or somebody else says, please call 911 or please call the mobile crisis team. And so now we're going to head into our self-care send-off for this episode here. We're hoping it'll be a positive point. And so I'm going to challenge each and every one of you listening to try to have a positive affirmation in the mirror tomorrow. I know it sounds ridiculous. I feel ridiculous, but I also feel great when I do it. So what you do is you stand up in front of the mirror, you fluff your hair, you get yourself all set, okay? You're going to say this out loud. It doesn't count if you don't say it out loud, all right? So Anita, what are you going to try?
So I'm going to say, I know who I am and I'm enough. Drew, okay. What are you going to say?
I want to say that each step I take takes me closer to where I want to be. Julie?
My personal favorite is I love challenges and what I can learn from them. And you know what? Sometimes I say to myself, not in the mirror, and when I'm experiencing a challenge. So really quick, I'm going to highlight some of our upcoming events. I mentioned earlier that Children's Mental Health Week is May 6th through 12th. We have a ton of events going on that week. On Monday, we have a special needs estate planning workshop for parents. So somebody that's looking at how do they take care of their kids after they're gone and if they have added complications or benefits or things, we have that. That's at 6 p.m. on Monday. On Tuesday at 1 p.m., Shepherd Pratt Center for Eating Disorders is coming out and talking about signs, symptoms, and ways to support those with eating disorders. On Wednesday, our partner, Grassroots, is going to come do Question, Persuade, Refer, which is QPR. It is suicide prevention. If you are of this age group, you are welcome to come from 5 to 7. We're going to, again, do a suicide prevention workshop on that Wednesday. We're going to talk about Kevin Hines and his story. He's pretty awesome. You should Google him. Thursday, if you're really interested in emerging adults, maybe you're a faculty here or a professor and you want to learn a little bit more, please come out 2 to 3 p.m. on Thursday. We're taking a break on Friday. And then on Saturday, Anita and I here are going to be doing youth mental health first aid, and that is free to a Howard County resident. We are filling up really quickly. We only have a couple of spots left, but if you're interested, please find my email in the podcast description and send me an email and say you want to come. And, you know, it's been real. Do your self-care send-off and tell us all about it on social media.